Poppies, welcome back to another episode of Brain Pops, the podcast approaching mental and physical challenges behind the scenes of professional sports. We are back again. We are back in English this time. My name is Dominic Theodorou, and of course, I would like to introduce also my partner in crime, Lennart Stechmann. Hello, Lennart.
Hey, Dom. How are you doing? Good to be back, finally, and also in English. I'm very much looking forward to this episode.
Yeah, first of all, I think we have to apologize a little bit because, again, there's a slight delay in our schedule.
You know, you got to keep the people waiting sometimes, you know, for the really good stuff. And today we really have the good stuff.
I also think so. Yeah, who is our guest today? We have Stefan Weissenberg on the show. And Stefan Weissenberg, he has...
Quite a name.
Quite a name. And he has a ton of experience in the stuff that he does. He's a player development coach. And in the past, he has worked with... How should I put this?
Some names out there.
Quite interesting basketball players, for example. Just to give you here a few names, like PJ Tucker, who's now still playing in the NBA. Brad Wanamaker is still in the NBA. Daniel Theis, of course, he's also still in the NBA. Kyle Hines, big player in the EuroLeague. Nikos Tsizis, Nicolo Melli, Maxi Kleber, Caris LeVert. I mean, for all the basketball poppies out there,
these are quite some names you can work with. Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and today we want to look in his way of working, you know, get a little bit behind the secrets on why such people want to work with him and work with him successfully. And I'm really excited to get his view on things, let's say.
Exactly. And the job, player development coach... I think we're probably going to touch on that in the episode. It's quite a niche, I would say. So,
Even though I guess the market is growing. Yeah, we will see. We'll see. Yeah.
All right.
It's definitely more than just skill training, I think.
Exactly. Yeah. Let's get him on the show.
Yes, sir.
Hey, Poppies, we're back. And with us is Stefan Weissenberg. Hey, Stefan, how are you?
Good morning. Good morning, gentlemen.
Good morning, Stefan. Good to have you here.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, in the introduction, we already mentioned the name player development coach. And I was just thinking maybe you will give us just a little, you know, introduction about yourself and maybe also where your passion for skill development came from, and maybe also define the term player development coach a little bit.
Early in the morning, really hard questions right away.
Yeah, right away.
We jump right into it, straight to business.
Tough morning. I think the term player development coach is a term that came from the NBA. It's a lot more common over there. For my personal experience, I heard it for the first time when Chris Fleming mentioned it. And in that summer, I think it must have been 2009 or 2010, yeah, most probably. I had been working for this Bamberg project, but mostly in Nuremberg. We had two under 19 teams, one over here in Bamberg, and on the paper, worse one or a younger one in Nuremberg. That's the one that I was working with. In that summer, the Nuremberg site decided to quit this cooperation or this bigger basketball project, and so my future was kind of unclear. And Chris Fleming, who had become head coach of the Bamberg professional team 1 or 2 years before, he came up with the idea of making me the player development coach of the pros. And I loved it from the beginning. I loved the term. I loved the idea because I felt like, yeah, that's what I want to be. And that's, I kind of felt that's what I am. And I had never heard it before. Later on, with on my first trips to the NBA, like two, three years later, I felt that it was, again, like much more common and also much more appreciated and valued to have coaches who do that, or who let's say, concentrate on this topic exclusively. And from that point on, it kind of took this direction. My passion for it, or my big interest for learning, for acquiring new stuff, I think it has always been there from the, I think it's in me. I'm very, very interested in just learning new things. I did track and field when I was young, and I just wanted to copy things. I saw guys in high jump or long jump or sprinters or hockey players, and I just loved to watch it, and I wanted to try everything and learn that, all that movement and stuff. Yes.
Do you think there has been a shift in Germany also? Because I'm not sure, correct me if I'm wrong, but German teams having a guy like you in the organization, that's still pretty rare, right? Or
yes. Well, usually you have an assistant who does all the assistant coaches' duties, and then if he likes it, or you know, if the head coach wants him to do it, or for whatever reason, he does player development too. So, and there's plenty of these coaches who do a very, very good job. I had the luxury of after the Fleming era ended, in which I was later on a normal assistant too, with these player development duties added. But later on, with the Trinchieri staff, the staff got bigger, and Daniele Baesi had the idea and the plan to let me do this exclusively, and it was fantastic for me. I had so much more time, so much more energy to prepare, to learn, to look at stuff at home that I would then bring to the practice, and save so much time and energy when I was able not to do all the classic game prep that an assistant coach does. But to answer your question, it's still rare, but it's getting there. Obviously, in Munich, there's Emilio Kovacic, who does a fantastic job with player development. There's Carlos Frade, who's phenomenal with creativity and stuff like that. Also, Ulm has an extra spot for player development, and I think it's great. I think it's great if clubs understand that this investment is a good one for their players. And if they are able to separate this one spot from, let's say, the normal coaching staff, because it also adds stability to your organization. If you have a person, or like the NBA teams have maybe even more, who are working for the club first, and then second for the staff, because they can stay. They're not so connected with the staff exclusively, which helps the club to add a little bit of continuity and stability.
The term, I just want to come back to the term player development coach. How would you define that? What is, for example, your primary or your main task?
I think the main task varies a lot, because at the end, player development. So what player is it, and what development does he need? And that's my task. So first, who is he? Is he an 18-year-old that is on the roster of the first team already? Or does he play for our second team? Or is he a 32-year-old veteran who just arrived and who signed for one season, and maybe then he's out again? So all these scenarios are totally different, the personalities are totally different. The situations basically put the player and me in my role in a certain or between certain brackets already that I have to deal with. So then you add the head coach. I take a lot of pride in, okay, what does the head coach want? What is his thinking, his system? So, of course, we know that, especially in the States, there's tons of trainers, there's tons of individual coaches who, you know, approach players almost aggressively, trying to, and it has become a big business. I've always taken a lot of pride in, I want to do it for an organization. I want to do it for a staff, and also understand the needs of the head coach. That's how I learned it, and I think that's a totally different situation. Of course, if you have a team and you are a trainer from outside who meets with one of the players once in a while, that's a situation that can be very helpful. But if you have somebody who understands, well, this is the team tactics. This is what we are preparing the next 3 days for the game. And this is a totally different approach that goes much deeper. And again, I see it as my duty to understand it and to adjust my teaching, to adjust my my training to that, so it fits the team tactics.
Mm-hmm. And go ahead.
I was wondering, how do you, like, what are the advantages of your role being part of the organization and not like a guy from the outside, or also having at the same time that assistant coach role? Like, does that relationship change with players since you're like coming from a different angle?
I think yes. I think the big advantage is that in certain situations, the players feel a little bit more comfortable. Why? Because there's maybe a little bit more distance between our setup. Let's say I'm there with player A, who did not get a minute last night. Right, so he's disappointed, he's angry, he's this and that, but I can be there with him and for him the next day. And of course, there's going to be words, he can get it all out, he can spit it all out, and that's important. And I think over those years, I've learned to filter it a little bit, to give him a good feeling, to let him know I'm there, that we're going to do some work. At the same time, maybe give some information that I think that's necessary, that has to be communicated, combined with the other part. Okay, there's some information that will stay here and that will not go further to the head coach. What's also good, and that's my responsibility. Okay, there has to be privacy. There has to be the absolute high level of trust. But also, again, I want to use the word filter again. What do I decide to, let's leave it here, and what do I bring to the head coach maybe? Well, the head coach does not know that this player feels like this or that, or that he performed badly last night, but he had a fever and he didn't tell anybody. I just made that up. So yeah.
It's a field of minds.
Yeah, maybe.
In a way.
So sometimes it's almost confidential, you know.
Yeah,
I remember many situations with from the years when we used to play internationally. So let's say the team leaves for a EuroLeague game and we leave one or two players at home who are tired or who are injured or who just need a break. And the sports director back then would decide, listen, you're going to take player B and C. They're not going to travel. Work them out. And then everybody's gone. The team is gone. The coaching staff is gone. And suddenly you have this totally private situation in our practice gym. And I sit with the player. We have no stress. We have no time stress. We can start at 9:30 or 9:37, and nobody cares. Mm-hmm. And suddenly we sit and we talk, and the player opens up and tells me maybe about his family or about his sibling that he has a good relationship or that he misses. I don't know. He misses his wife because she's not there with him, and that opens up. And if he opens up as a person, he's also gonna open up as a player, this super discreet situation also on the court helps so much if you work on something that the player lacks. Okay, if the head coach is not there, because usually nobody wants to like pull his pants down and show his weaknesses when the head coach is there. Or if if teammates are there. So not that I'd ever planned these situations, but back then with the Trincare staff, that's what the sports director Baezi wanted me to do. And I felt going into these situations more and more that it was really, really helpful to work on these situations, to build up trust, and through this, obviously, I'm also very interested in talking to people and learning how they function, how they are as guys, and bring that on the court, bring that trust on the court, and then help them with something that they maybe don't want to talk about it. They didn't want to show it. Hey, I like to go left, but as soon as I go right, I feel like I lose the ball because I'm a weak ball handler with my right hand, or something like that. But now nobody's here. I can show you now.
So that's probably one of the main advantages of splitting that role, like this trust level you can have with them.
Definitely.
Because if you're an assistant, obviously you have so much, let's say, call it power over him in a way, on playing time and, you know, like a lot closer relationship to the head coach, like in my mind now.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. I think it's correct what you said, I think it's a role that's different every day, because it's different with every player. Some get angry at the head coach. Wow, I didn't play again. I want to leave. And the next one comes in and says, well, I don't care anymore. You know, it goes up and down and all these emotions. And I think I understand them because I've been there. I played on a higher level back then, and I know all these feelings when you don't get a lot of minutes and you're angry at everybody, at the coach and at the club and at everything, and then it's good to have somebody to talk to and work with.
Yeah, Dom, you see similarities to your role the way Stefan just explained his, like talking to the players and relationship wise.
Yeah, of course. I mean, usually in the past, I thought of myself as, you know, when I was still a team manager, I'm not a team manager anymore, but still sometimes you find yourself being in the middle. Yeah. In the middle, you know, there's a player, then there's you, and on the other side, there's the head coach. And then you obviously you have to decide sometimes, okay, what kind of stuff the head coach needs to know. And, there's some stuff that the head coach doesn't need to know. Yeah, and you have to make the decision in that particular situation, of course.
Let's say at this point, shout out to all the staff of many sports teams who are in this role and who are trying to do their best. Keep grinding.
Stefan, maybe could you give the listeners a little bit of an example of, for example, how your role with us, like Brose Bamberg, looks like? Where do you take over parts and practices? When and maybe how often do you work with players individually? Or you can also contrast that to your role in the NBA if you want.
Well, I think there's three parts where you can put in individual work. First, bringing in guys for extra individual sessions. That is possible if there's not too much load, not too many games, And then that's the classic, the team practices in the afternoon, and you bring a player in the morning for, let's say, a 40-50 minute session. Let's say 10 years ago, that was the classic concept. Okay, let's have individuals today, bring everybody in extra. The advantage is you have a lot of time. You have you know, an extra schedule. Everybody comes sometimes alone or in groups of two. Maybe the luxury version. What I've learned in the NBA is just by watching, and I was surprised how well it worked. I had underestimated it a lot. Is pre-practices, where the players just come a little earlier. They don't have to come extra. That works very, very well when there's many games, when you don't want to put extra load on players. So you give them, let's stay with this day as an example, and there's team practice in the afternoon. They can still stay home in the morning and rest, but team practice starts at 4 and player X comes at 3:30. And he's going to work with me for 15 to 20 minutes. His load does not change much. We're going to, if we can, and then, of course, there has to be communication with the athletic coach who might say, or with the head coach, okay, let's manage his load. He had a lot of minutes, or he had 20 minutes yesterday. Let's not do it too intensively. But then you can put in stuff. That's a concept that I was able to watch in San Antonio, and I was stunned how well it worked, because you can do it 2-3 times per week and nobody has to come extra, just a little earlier, and at the end you have 2 or 3 times 20 minutes. It's a full hour of individual work in a week where you maybe play 2 or 3 times. And this concept, let's say we started to copy it with the Trinchieri staff, because we had a lot of games. We played EuroLeague and we had high goals, but we also had a relatively big roster. And I found it helped me a lot to stay structured, because that's not where I'm very good at. Okay, to keep an overview of who comes when, for how many minutes, did I work with everybody this week at all, or so usually my head is not the best organized one, but this concept helped me a lot to keep a very easy overview, just writing the names on the whiteboard, who will come in the next day. So we really pushed this concept in those years. But it also depends on the head coach, right? Does he want that? Or, and now I'm coming to the third, let's say, possibility to put in individual work. It's as a part of the team practice, which is usually already going a little bit in the pre-tactical or tactical direction. Let's go back to that 4 o'clock afternoon practice. Let's say we play in 2 days. And now the team practice starts, the athletic coach warms the players up, or maybe we've moved a little bit and everybody's activated, and now we do a skill or pre-tactical part of, okay, let's have the bigs split from the guards. The guards might be with the athletic coach and do some activation, and the bigs work with me on, let's say, slipping, because, you know, our next opponent hedges really hard, so we want to slip and then stop in balance and pass the ball well, blah, 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 blah. I just made that up. Because the head coach says, listen, we're going to need that. Work on this. Mm-hmm. Or it can be the guards working on this or that. So in the team practice, I think it's good if you work on a skill for 6, 8, 10 minutes, whatever. You can split it up however you want. And then again, there has to be the head coach saying, I want it like this. Because, or I want everybody together, because, or I want them split up in groups or in twos of a big and a small, whatever. I think there's a lot of possibilities. Let's say Andrea Trinchieri always wanted it to okay, let's have six minutes, take the guards first, and the bigs are going to be with the athletic coach, and then we're going to turn it around, and here's the topic. Okay, we're gonna short roll and look at this and that. So this third let's say concept of individual work, that the in practice one, is mostly a pre-tactical one already, leading the players to, okay, here's what will be needed tactically in 2 days because we play, and here's the technical or skill tools that you will need in 2 days. So we're gonna work on them now.
Okay, and we already touched on it that you're also active in the NBA, and there your role is a little bit different, since, as the way I understood, you fly over for certain times, and then you also work from distance with the players.
Well, it used to be like that when in my 2 years with the Brooklyn Nets. Like this connection is not there anymore. Unfortunately, I couldn't finish my second year because of COVID, and then everything moved quickly. You know, many of the players of the Nets left the team, and the staff got set up totally different. But during that time, that was like you explained. Okay, very special tasks. Okay, so I fly in to work with two or three guys who are struggling with their shot. So let's help them and their responsible coach with the alignment of the shooting. Work on it for the 3 or 4 days where I would work there. I still do these trips, but not for a specific team anymore, but for players. I just came back from New York with working with Thomas Sadaransky, who I've worked with for 5 or 6 years now. So that was a similar kind of work. Okay, we have a frame of 3 days. Let's use it in an optimal way. And then when I go back to my Bamberg team, I keep watching it when I have time, you know, what he does, send him a clip once in a while. And that's again, like a total different approach, because you have to stay connected. But I think when these COVID times came, and now everybody knows what a Zoom meeting is, back then everybody let's say I remember when I started to do this remote work for Brooklyn, then it was like, how do you want to coach somebody when you're not there? And I thought when COVID came, I had a little bit of an advantage already, because I had been there. Okay, here's the Atlantic between us, but we're gonna stay connected through clips and through small hints, and I think it's possible. I think it works. It also helped me last season when the setup was a totally different one. Like the time on the court with players was a lot less than I was able to spend than the years before. So I tried to find a way with players like Devin Hall or whoever, still to give them feedback on the part of their skill work, and then we did it through video, similar to what we just mentioned.
And what do you prefer? Is it your work within the team, within practices? Is it maybe the work in small groups, or maybe also the one-on-one work?
To be honest, I don't differ that. Like sometimes these small group sessions have so much energy, and then at the same time, if it's a one-on-one phase where the player opens up and you can feel that you really help him with something, that 2 or 3 days or 2 weeks later improves, that's very enjoyable too. So to be honest, I enjoy everything.
So I found that interesting when you said that you fly in, or used to fly in to an NBA team or wherever. Maybe this can also happen in Germany, where a player, let's say, he's in a shooting slump, and then you come in to help him. Mm-hmm. How would you describe that process, and how much, especially I want to like know about how much more is it skill and how much on the other side is also, let's say, let's call it mental aspect?
Well, first I need to be prepared. So before I go, I need to know who is it, right? Who am mm-hmm. I going to work with? So that mm-hmm. was very, very interesting in the years with Brooklyn. Okay, I'm going to go there and I might work with three guys, but like with three of eight. So maybe it's going to be him, maybe him, maybe him, maybe him. So I prepared for 6 to 8 players, or well, let's say six, and knowing that it's going to be three or four that I will work with, because one is injured. The second one, you know, his load is high, so he won't be available. So I was waiting for basically a window to open just to then jump through it and be ready. So mm-hmm. and that doesn't change here. So whatever we imagine, I have to be prepared first. So then, and you already mentioned it, of course there's and we know it and everybody knows it, how big that mental part of it is. So coming from the situation that I had like at the beginning of this week, where you have a player who's one of the best in his craft in international basketball. We're talking about Thomas Satoransky, one of the best point guards in international basketball. He just led his national team to the World Cup, to the Olympics, and he's about to lead it to the Eurobasket in the coming summer. But he's in a situation which is very hard. You know, that he's not playing much. There's frustration. He was part of a trade that maybe brought him into a situation where he's not very much appreciated, which can happen in the NBA. And I have to understand that. I have to understand how it is. I can't come in and push and start doing my thing.
Yeah, yeah.
We're talking about a world class athlete, and these guys are totally different. Some are highly sensitive, some are highly motivated, but maybe in a slump, that's what the word you used, maybe in a slump or in a tough situation, they're totally different. They might be frustrated, they might be angry.
Vulnerable, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So going into the situation first, just to repeat, I have to be prepared, and then I have to reconnect with him. That's what I like to do. And many times it's just feeling out the situation, and I think that's what I've learned over the years. I'm here for him, not the other way around. And if it's just talking and getting some shots up, it might be the best thing in this situation. Okay, I might prepare 51 exercises and drills, but maybe he just wants to tell somebody how hard it is for him in this moment. Right, just like the first example that I brought. Okay, there I might have a guy who didn't play last night, and maybe he'll tell me, "Yeah, but we could work here forever." But I'm not gonna play, and what's my answer gonna be? So that's important. I have to listen, and I have to let them talk, because they listen all the time. You know, the head coach comes in on the assistant. Hey, do that. You're gonna guard this guy, so don't let him go right and take the shot away. And little, have your hand up. And we're gonna high energy, and we want to do this, and we want to be physical, and huff, 5,000 things that are normal. If I bring the same, his head's gonna explode.
Yeah. I love what you said right there, and how you framed it, because that to me is one of the parts in communication that gets lost a lot of times. You know, you just said, you know, there are always two parts basically in conversations or communication. One is the, let's say, digital part, like all the information, let's say, you know, what you just mentioned, that are in basketball, a lot of information are transferred from, let's say, staff to players. But then at the same time, you also always have like an offer of relationship, let's say, Like, and that's like analog communication. You can't really say, and you need to listen. And I love that you just said that, because that usually, or a lot of time, gets lost, and is it's tough, especially in bigger groups and stuff, to keep that up. But really, that's what people a lot of the time focus on, and then it helps being, like you said, a world-class athlete. And then don't get a, like an offer to relationship. Yeah, I'll show you how we do this and this. You just straighten up your elbow and then you're going to be fine. Like, it's not going to work.
I remember when I did my A license course, and there it was back in Austria. And the first part was a general one about biology and physiology and everything. And we had a coach from soccer, had been a soccer coach as a tutor in this one class, and he was talking about the inner view or the inner vision, and he kept saying, let the athlete talk, let him tell you. And it was so simple, and but it stuck in my head. And many times I go into let's say workouts or sessions without knowing where to start. And I found that it's the easiest. The easiest is, well, let him talk a little bit. And start with something positive. Okay, what is good at this moment? What's working well? And then he's gonna say something. And that usually opens the door for my head. Okay, yeah. I'm not saying this is how you have to do it. It's just what works for me. That's what works for me. I try to connect and I try to let him talk. And then that usually opens the door and gives us the first steps, because maybe he's gonna mention something, some situation. Yeah, on this pick and roll, I struggle so much. And then let's look at it, and we already have something. Just by, and I come back to this soccer coach. Just by let him talk and just listen, and. And then you can usually not be wrong, because he's going to say it anyway. He's going to say it. Of course, we're talking about a world-class athlete or a grown professional. Maybe with a 16 or 17-year-old, it will be different.
Yeah. But usually, you know, the players have a pretty good idea on maybe what's important or what's good for them. So it makes a lot of sense to listen to them.
I mean, it's like education. I can see it with my children. And many times, like two hours later in the evening when they sleep, I'm like, wow, why didn't I just listen? Like, my kid was about to say what it needs, and I just kept saying, no, Dad, you have to do your, I don't know, I'm just making that up now, you have to do your homework. But she was saying something totally different. Why didn't I just listen? She was trying to tell me what she needs anyway. And it's just like, and like, coaching is educating. It's the same thing.
Does that differ, this approach, if you, let's say, work with a player who is, you know, on top of his game at the moment, who is like, maybe he's overachieving or something? Do you approach that then a little different, or would you say the same mindset?
I don't think it differs. I mean, if somebody's overachieving, let's better do nothing, right?
Yeah. Yes.
I've been doing this for a while now, and now it's a lot easier for me to say, and I have a lot more confidence now in sometimes not doing anything. Okay, it's all good. I don't have to change something. I don't have to do much, because it's all good. It's all good. Let's not fix anything that's not broken.
Yeah, you're there for the players, and the players are not there for you to like.
I think that's a very, very important sentence you just said. Like, you should never turn that around. You should never turn that around. They're not there for me. No. Yeah. I'm not there to use our work for myself. No. The other way around, and only then it's going to be a good and clean and healthy relationship. As long as they feel I'm there for them and not the other way around.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, that's really, yeah, one of the biggest things, because I see it a lot with coaches, not only in sport, but in general with people who supposedly help others, but basically it's the other way around, because they just want to show, okay, I know this drill, I can do this, I can do that, da 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 da, and they just totally forgot on what's necessary for the player here at that point.
Well, I think it's tempting. I think it's tempting because, again, this personal training or skills training, it has become a huge business, and it's also starting in Europe, and I think that's very, very positive. But again, let's do something good and then talk about it, not the other way around, right? And still, if you don't talk too much about it, the players will transport your reputation, and they know best what they like and what not, and it's all gonna be good, like, right? You don't have to post everything you do. That's my opinion. Again, it's not a sin to do it. But again, if as soon as it gets a touch of, the players are there for these workouts, and not the workouts are there for the players, I think that's a line that, in my eyes, again, for me, shouldn't be crossed.
Yeah, and I think that's why it was so important that what you said in the beginning, the setup around it. You know, like, you're there for the organization and you're not somebody from the outside coming in trying to, like, get this contract or keep working with the player, and then you're like suddenly in this role of the magician who has to do something crazy so the player just goes in a positive way crazy with his, like, skills and stuff. And also the culture, if you're on the team, like, how are you valued? Can you get value also, like, do you get valued from the head coach, from the organization, wherever who you talk to, and you don't need that from the players per se, you know? And I think that probably makes it easier for you to work as a skill development coach if this is clear.
Well, definitely. I'm going back to this situation here in the club. Of course, the club has to have an interest in this, and that's how I was brought in here. Wolfgang Herder back then, I think in 2007, they wanted an extra coach for individual work. Back then it was mostly for youth, and this just fit me. It fit me, and I loved it, and that's why I'm still so committed to it. That's what I always wanted to be. That's the work I always wanted to do, and of course it developed inside of the club, but it also developed in basketball. The game develops, this role develops, it's always different, and it's different for every head coach. Somebody wants this, somebody wants that more, somebody wants all coaches involved, somebody wants only me to do it, somebody wants it every day, somebody wants it once a week, somebody wants it only for the whole team. Somebody says, take the guys individually. So I have to adapt with every head coach, try to understand him. And of course, also, like, with the players, give him the feel, I'm here for you. I'm here for you and the team.
Yeah.
And with some, it takes a lot of time, and with some it goes very quickly, who feel, okay, the guy doesn't want my job, he's going to help my players, that's good.
Yeah, Dom, this makes me think of you had, in the pre-talk, you had a question, I think it went somehow like, how do I demonstrate, or how do you demonstrate your work? And that, to me, is one of those topics, like, you know, who do you want to demonstrate that to? You know, that's what made me think of this, how important that is.
Absolutely true.
Dom, what goes through your mind? What do you want to pick on?
I was thinking maybe If it's okay with you guys, let's go a little bit in the direction of player profiling. And I wanted to ask you, Stefan, what is the first thing you look at when you observe a player you maybe haven't seen before, or you start like looking at video clips from that particular player?
Well, if I cannot see him live in the gym, and let's take this example, I can only see him on video, the first thing is like the general picture of him. How does he move? How is he built? Is he a bulky, strong, short-legged, short-armed cannonball? Or is he a long, lanky, skinny type of player? That we're already talking about, you know, two totally different bodies. Like, how is his body? How is he? That general picture comes in my mind quickly. How are his feet? How are his hands? How does he run? So, but I must say it comes to me easy. Like, I look at that and I don't need much time to get a feel for, okay, we have a guy with great touch, but he's avoiding contact because he's very light and he's good with that stuff. But he avoids going left all the time, let's say, because all the clips I see, he's either shooting or going right. Blah, 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 blah. Okay? So that general picture, that's the first thing. And then the second would be, okay, what is he doing like pre-tactically? What does he do basketball wise? But first, what body is that? You know, what? Mm-hmm. How is he built? How is he moving? And that already gives me, that opens the first door for my understanding. Mm-hmm. Because for whatever comes afterwards, his body is the base of our work. I have to understand the biomechanics of what he's doing. And again, that's relatively easy for me. In my mind and in my understanding and in my past of my education, what I've learned and what I've read and whatever, it comes relatively easy for me to, okay, his levers are like this and that. The energy in his shot comes more from his elbow and his forearm and his hand than from his legs. Blah, blah, blah. So, again, like the physiology, the biomechanics of this particular body or player, that's the first thing I see. I don't look at it. I just see it. It comes easy for me.
Mm-hmm.
And through observation, then throughout this process, you then define on what areas this particular player need to work on skill-wise?
Well, I think from that point on, we already have to understand the team concept. Okay, how are we playing, right? Example, we played last night, and after one of our players got blocked inside, and the head coach came to me and said he has to work on craftiness, he has to become more crafty. So I take that right away in my pocket and say, okay, we're gonna put that into the next pre-practice. And it's easy. Again, you just listen to what the head coach wants and let's do it. We already have a topic. Mm-hmm. We already have something that we need because the head coach wants it for him, and the head coach is the boss, and he, the more he knows what he wants, the easier for me to find topics to work on. So to answer your question, Dom, what to work on? We can work on everything with everybody. Everybody can improve everything, right? Ball handling, shooting, finishing, blah, 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 blah. Also, defense is a skill. Defensive stance is a skill. How to present my body in front of the ball, that's a skill that we forget many times. We think skill is, okay, we're going to dribble, we're going to work on 57 different moves that are possible and this and that. And we can go on Instagram and find 500 teachers or skill coaches who present it fantastically. No, there's so many who are really, really good in analyzing. We can do this, we can do that. There's finishes and this. And I try to learn from all of them. But But again, my approach is not, or my duty, it's my duty. I can't, okay, let's go in and work on these things today because that's just my idea. No, we're gonna use him like this. So that's what we're gonna work on. Because we need it for our game. And of course we can say, no, we don't need this, we don't need, but the more I know from the head coach, look, he needs this, the better for me.
Mm-hmm. And how do you go into communication with the player now? Let's just take that situation. Head coach in game said, okay, he needs to work on his finishing, let's say.
Yeah.
And then it, 1 or 2 days later, you're in the gym with the player. How do you like start working with him? Like if there is already a topic and if you can't just not listen to him and go with the flow, what the player thinks he needs, if he maybe even disagrees.
Well, most of the times I have the clip, so I can send it to his phone if I want to, if he doesn't remember.
Yeah.
I can talk about, remember when you got blocked this time? I think it's going to help you if.
Yeah.
That will be my approach. If you get, or I can come in and say, yeah, you know, coach was really mad and now he wants you to work, or he wants us to work on this or that. Maybe not so smart, right? Because it's not going to lead anywhere. So, of course, I have to commit. I have to commit on that. And it was perfectly right. It was perfectly correct. So, the tasks that the head coach has and the picture that the head coach wants, again, the clearer it is for him and for me, the easier for me to get work done. Yeah.
Yeah, one of my all-time favorite questions is always, how would you define, just pretty basic and simple, pretty general, how would you define a good player?
Well, a good player is committed. He's committed to his craft, for what he does. He comes prepared. He comes early. He's internally interested in doing well. I always say the guys, the easiest ones for me to work with are the ones with the big motor, because they want to go anyway, and I help them on their way. I don't have to push them. Like the guys that you have to push, they're going to exhaust you because they only move when you push. And once you stop pushing, they slow down again. So you can see the end of it already. And sometimes it breaks your heart. But these guys, they just lack commitment. They cannot match the guys with the big commitment. The ones who are, oh, he's here again. Or, oh, he's on the phone again. Can we work tomorrow? And these guys sometimes even start to be annoying. I'm like, come on, and you again? Can you leave me alone? You want to work every day? No. And we have one or two guys like that on the team, and I think Luis Olinde was a great example. Very talented, not endlessly talented, but a talented basketball player who's highly committed. Can we do something tomorrow? Can we do something? Can we do something? Can we do something? I think he broke the record in text messages per day. And Chris Sengfelder is the best example of this team here. Like he's always ready, always willing. You have to eat more like slow him down. No, we're not going to work today. So again, what is a good player is committed. He never forgets his bottle of water, or he never forgets his towel, or he's always prepared. He has three pairs of shoes ready, not one that he maybe forgets. Then and like, ah, yeah, poo. You never have to tell these guys, hey, come on, pick it up now. You know, never, never. Either the other way around. You have to slow him down.
Since it's not a perfect world, and you have players that, let's say, you feel the need that they need to be pushed, do you still push?
Of course. I think it's my job. I think it's my job. Mm-hmm. Either or even knowing that it can become problematic in the long run. But as long as they are in this, on this team, in this program, of course I push. But they are, of course, if we talk about give and take, they're the ones who take energy. And they hardly give. And of course I try to push buttons. Listen, when do you text me? You know, that's the ones where I text all the time. So that's the first thing. Of course, there must be some talent. Otherwise, okay, let's say my commitment for ice hockey is huge, but I'm just not talented. You know, and I'm too old. So let's be realistic, right? So there has to be a certain talent, of course, or enough talent that brings you somewhere, right? But also, like, not the highest talents. No. The 80% of the professionals are the ones with enough talent and the high commitment. That's the ones who play for 5, 6, 7, 10 years. Let's look at Carsten Tata, a Bamberg kid who plays a great role for the team that beat us last night. He's one of those. Like, he's talented enough. He has a good body, but he doesn't have a perfect or great body for basketball. He's very talented, but he's not endlessly talented for basketball. Okay, but committed, understanding what has to be done to live like a pro, what has to be done to stay healthy, what has to be done to take care of the body, what has to be done to be a good teammate, what has to be done to play his role on a team. And I think he's a great example coming out of this organization, learning. He learned to play with very, very, very good players and play his role. And bring this commitment. He brought this commitment, and we've had players with a lot more talent, but a lot less commitment. And from some of them, I don't even know where they are now.
So one last thing I want to touch on is the example we had a little bit earlier. Let's take again the shooting slump, or it can be in general, it's not going that well. How do you work, if you work with players also on the mental side on this? Like, how do you approach them? Maybe you can give us a couple of words on that.
Well, let's imagine a situation, right? Okay, the player had 2 or 3 bad games and didn't shoot well. Of course we can talk. We can maybe even bring in a mental trainer. And my work is sometimes a very mental one, right? But at the end, he has to come back to shooting the ball in the basket. And then my approach is a very simple one. I have to create a situation where he puts the ball in the basket. And nothing helps more in this than just making shots. Just make shots. And then I can choose a certain approach in my workout, in my practice, in my situation that will help him. For example, let's just start with finishes. What are you good at? And he sees the ball go in. Let's say free throws are working well at this point. Let's shoot free throws. Ball goes in. Let's just shoot twos. The ball goes in. And he sees how the ball goes in. And then the thoughts are going to become a little less. We can approach like that. Nothing helps better than makes. Nothing helps, because that's where we want to go back to, right? And of course we can talk. I can help with video and show him clips from the past, and so he sees himself how he makes it. But still, I mean, we're not going to improve him just by watching TV, right? And we all know how important the power and the influence of video is, but you know, we can't just sit him on in front of the screen and let him watch mates. He has to shoot it in again, and then I have to create a situation where he makes shots again.
We had once a really good player on here, Khaled El Amin, and he was telling us, now that you talk about the video, that he, the night before, keeps imagining himself making shots. Mm-hmm. Like not actually shooting, just like really being in that mental state and imagining dribbling and then making the shot. Do you work with, let's say, techniques like that, like imagination?
I think visualization is, and we don't need to talk about it here because everybody knows the proof of what goes on in our brains. If we do these exercises, that it works. There's 500 books who prove it, which prove it. So of course, I remember myself as a player before games, just finding. Usually, you'll laugh now. I found a toilet before our home games on this one game because I knew nobody's gonna come in here, like in some different locker room. And I put the towel over my head and I knew, okay, it's quiet here. And I imagined myself in the spots where I usually played and I'm making my shots. So that's no rocket science. We know how visualization works and how strong it can be, right? Definitely.
Good.
Nothing helps better than makes.
Do you have anything else?
Nothing helps better than makes. I like that.
I was about to say that's probably the title of this episode, huh? Yeah. I like that one.
I maybe have one more thing which I shortly would like to touch on. And it's, in my mind, it's more like a little bit of a controversial topic. It's the topic of transfer. Let's say from my background, you know, when we think about strength and conditioning, for me, like strength and conditioning in season, this is always, you know, I want to improve health first and the performance second. But only because of the fact that we are lifting, that will not make us a better basketball player directly. I like to call it strength and conditioning work. Hopefully gives us an indirect training effect. So let's say if a player comes in after the summer and he is used, you know, he worked out in the summer and he had like a plan, and I think he will have to, or he will be more robust and he will be able to, for example, you know, have more skill training, have more team practices and stuff. But the question that always arises when I now think about your topic, Stefan, like player development coach or skills coach, what about the dose response relationship? Only from your experience, what do you think a player needs to invest time wise that he sees improvements on the court?
Whew, great question and terrible question, because I think we are all. I think we are all totally in the dark, because there's so many factors that we cannot influence, right? There's so let's take Sengfelder, for example. He put in 2.5 weeks last summer of like incredible intensity of skill work only. He wanted it. He talked about his goals. And I think this transfer worked very well. He's a top five scorer in the league this year, and that's where he wanted to move towards. And but still, I think the other examples where you are totally not clear. Well, how much did it help at all? Because every game is different, every shot is different, and in some games you see. Yeah, it worked. That's what we worked on. And these situations, he's better in. Let's make that up. But there are other factors, like what if he gets injured and we start from almost zero again? What if a new coach comes and he plays a lot less, or he plays at a different position and you were working on pick and pops at the four, but now he's playing at the three or at the five. And he's in totally different situation. He's not used like that. So then there can't be hardly any transfer from that work. So these factors, they come in and they come in all the time. Let's say we have a point guard that doesn't pass him the ball much. He doesn't get he worked on his shot or on this one post move, but we never post him up because we decided no, we're gonna screen and roll with you more. So I think that's very hard. We are all like trying to predict, as you said, you know, what's going to be. We want to improve your health. We want to improve your performance, because we imagine or we try to predict something's going to happen. But then there's all these factors who come in. And that's why this will always be very, very relative. And in certain situations, it explodes upwards and you see 80% of the input. Wow, fantastic. This guy got stronger and he's healthy and he's not injured the whole season. And like for my part, wow, we improved the three-point shot by 7% and the free throw shooting by blah, 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 this and that. But sometimes, wow, we invested so much. Now the kid's not playing. And he left the team in December because... And then maybe it's gonna help him later or on a different team. So I understand the question, but it's so individual from situation to situation that
it's just so multifactorial. Huh? It's just so many things that
definitely.
All right,
Stefan, thank you so much.
Yeah,
so much for this input. I loved listening to you every second of it.
I hope.
A lot of brain pops for me already. I'm excited to see how my mind works tomorrow when I have thought about it a little bit. And one last thing. Do you have somebody in mind? Do you know somebody who you would like to be on this podcast? Like who could also give us an interesting perspective on the mental and physical challenges of professional sports?
There's so many people.
First one that pops in your mind.
Oof. Like 20 come on my mind, so that's your guys' job. You have to
We never had this answer. No, we take this.
That's your job.
All right.
Sorry, I can't help with that.
Okay. Still, thank you very much. Very much.
Pleasure.
It was a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
All right. Bye-bye, Dom. See you in the after show.
See you later, Stefan. Yo, ciao.
Okay. And here we are in the after show where Dom and me talk about the brain pops we had during this episode. It's one day after we recorded with Stefan. And I just listened to the episode again. I really liked it. And I'm excited to hear what stayed in your mind, what gave you a brain pop, so to say.
Well, I have to admit, this was, again, one of these episodes while we were recording. You know, I was just missing so much. It is ridiculous. I don't know, maybe that's just me or... but I have to admit, that, like, again, there were so many things in there that are just... very interesting from his perspective. I'll just start. I just name one thing, for example, just the fact, you know, that you sometimes, as a coach, just shut up. Let the athlete talk.
Yeah,
I mean,
that
sounds so stupid.
Sounds simple.
It sounds stupid and simple, but I think it is exactly true. And for example... if I sometimes in the morning, sometimes, I mean, yeah, of course I do that basically every day. If I go to the guys and ask them how they are, I'm sometimes getting a little mad at myself because, for example, if I ask them, hey, how are you? You okay? And once I said the second sentence, I'm like, shut up. ask how are you and let him talk. And this happens sometimes to me, and I'm always after that I'm so mad at myself, because you know I want to hear what's going on. I don't want to give him already like some sort of an answer, you know. But that was again, that proved to me again, you know, less is more.
Yeah. And that's also one thing that really, really stuck with me, you know, like it's the attitude of a coach that really explains his success. Like, I don't think Stefan was, let's say, caught interest from NBA teams because he has the fanciest drills or the best skill drills or whatever. Like, I don't think that's what sparked the interest. I don't know. But I think with me, like with him, it's, or the way I listen to it, it's the way he approaches the players, the attitude behind it, the way he interacts. And also that one big thing you just said, listening to them. And yeah, and I think that's so crucial also about, I found it interesting, you guys set up in Bamberg, you know, where he, the way I understood it, is not really part of the coaching staff per se, but like more to the club. So, and that gives him a different role, a different way he can talk to players, a different relationship he can build. And I think for a player development coach, that's really important, because, you know, you have to work on, or you could work on weaknesses, but before you find, like, you have to find out first. And mm-hmm. in a way where the players don't, are not mad at themselves, and like they can see it positive and work on it, you know?
Yep. That's also something I found very interesting while I was doing the episode, when I was thinking about that. Yeah. It's kind of true what you touched on there.
Yeah, I think the expertise is out there, you know? It's just, do you have the expertise and also the right attitude that needs to come with it? And yeah, and one thing that I already touched on in the episode also was like this communication part. On the one hand, let's say the expertise, the information, what kind of drill are we doing and what does the player need to work on? And but then also this, I call it, I think, analog communication. So this, it's not really clear, but it's like the offer of relationship that is behind it. Your tone of voice, your I said attitude, or like nonverbal expressions. And I think that's really key to get through to the players. And Stefan must be great at it. Otherwise, I don't think he would have worked with the players he worked with that successfully.
Yeah, and that again goes back to being a good guy. Huh? I mean, that's also something I hear all the time. And it's just true. I think if Stefan was only good at the skill development, skill training. I think he wouldn't be where he is right now.
Yeah. And for that, I think you really gotta know yourself, know where you get your value from, so you don't come in the setup like in need. You know, you listen to the players, you like listen to them, you're there for them and not the other way around.
Exactly. Also a very important topic he touched upon.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, and that those two things were like my main, let's call them brain pops. Yeah, but that really stuck to me.
Yeah, same here. And then there was like another, like a small thing that also, it's like a similarity to strength and conditioning, for example, when he said, don't fix anything that is not broken. You know, that fits also in my area of work, because sometimes we just, or I observe coaches being obsessed with fixing something that is not broken. I don't know, for example, his squat doesn't look good. It needs to look better. So we need to improve it. No, if it's not broken, come on, don't fix it.
Yeah. Very interesting. And also one last thing I wanted to say, the similarities between your roles. Yeah. That was also interesting to me. Yeah.
Basically, is it is it interchangeable? I mean, basically, we should, you know, we both should listen a lot.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. And also, that middle role between players and, let's exactly. say, coaching staff, head coach and stuff. It's yeah.
And I can say that from experience, that is not easy sometimes.
Yeah. No, I can only imagine. Yeah. All right, man.
Let's wrap this up.
Oh, wow. Yeah. For whoever made it this far, thanks for listening. Yeah. If you have any questions, anything, any brain pops you guys have, let us know on Instagram or anywhere you can comment or find us. Yeah, Dom is definitely on Instagram too. Hit him up or hit up our account. And then, yeah, we're looking forward to hear from you. And if not, we'll hear you. No, you hear us next episode.
Exactly. Have a good night. And yeah, until next episode.
For sure. Bye-bye.
Bye.